Hey everybody, it's Sam Bennett. Thank you so much for joining me for the True Freedom Symposium, the when, what, why, and how to quit your day job, and what's really on the other side. Today's interview is with my hero, Pam Slim. Pamela Slim is an award-winning author, speaker, and small business coach. She spent the first 10 years of her business as a consultant to large corporations such as Hewlett-Packard, Charles Schwab, Cisco Systems, and in 2005, she started the Escape from Cubicle Nation blog, which led to coaching thousands of entrepreneurs from martial arts studios to software startups. And recently, Pam just opened a national small business learning laboratory in Mesa, Arizona. She is an extraordinary teacher, writer, and person. I know you're going to love this. Enjoy. Hi, everybody. Hi, it's me, Sam Bennett from the Organized Artist Company, here with the beautiful, the talented, the queen of us all, Pam Slim. Hi, Pam.
Hello. I'm not the queen of anybody because I'm not an empire builder, but yes, the person right alongside everybody out there.
The servant leader.
Exactly.
The benevolent leader. I'm so grateful to you're here, not only because I'm just super happy to have the time to hang out with you because we don't get to hang out nearly enough, but also because really you were sort of first on my list for this mark, for this program. I thought if I can't get Pam to talk, then I'm not going to do it because You literally wrote the book on Escape from Cubicle Nation, how to get from crying in the women's room or the men's room or the parking lot and having that sense of frustration and pointlessness and golden handcuffs, like where would I go? What would I do? And really helping people see what that journey looks like in a very real way, and sort of how to know what's right for them. So let's start with how did you get from where you were to where you are?
Yeah, so my journey has been through a lot of different work modes throughout my career. So I started more in nonprofit. My background was in community development, actually with a focus in non-formal education in Latin America. So, you know, really looking at grassroots social and economic change. And then I made my way through nonprofit, and then I got into corporate training and development, which I really loved so much, just working on the human side of business. But spent most of my career of working in larger companies, helping people to, you know, manage better and do change management and organization design and all those kind of things. So when I started my business in 1996, for the first 10 years, I was working as an independent consultant for companies on the human side of business that tended to be large companies. So, you know, HP and Cisco and 3Com, and I'm from the Bay Area originally. So that was really fun, engaging work of just really seeing how it is that we could create work environments that were really engaging. And I fundamentally believe that it is possible. I think we always have to, in our work, see the possibility and have that excitement of knowing that the time we're spending doing something, we believe that there is a possibility of it changing. And the time where we get to that point where we feel like what it is that we're doing is meaningless, and no matter what I do, it's never going to work, is usually past the time when we should be moving on to other things, right? In other organizations or on our own. So, yeah. So through that exploration in 2005, I moved from the Bay Area to Arizona, and I wanted to be off the road traveling so much because I got married and we started having kids. And so I really wanted to be working with people, many of whom I had met when I was a consultant, that would pull me aside and say, how did you do it? How did you leave your corporate job to start a business? And I knew enough through those conversations to realize that there's some very unique characteristics about the experience for people that have grown up in corporate. Leaving to start a business, it feels very different. There's a different social construct. It's a harder conversation sometimes to have with your parents when you're like a VP of marketing at a big company and they're still paying off your student loans, like their portion of your student loans. And all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to open a cookie company, you know, or I'm going to be an acupuncturist, you know, healer, and like all these things I love. Like my next door neighbor here now owns a cookie company. And I love acupuncturists and healers.
We should do both of those together. I think
that's a good idea. Amazing. Cookies are very healing. Right? But you know, there's a lot of very specific things to that change, that are specifically relevant to people who are in corporate leaving to start a business. So that I started in 2005 with my blog, Escape from Cubicle Nation, and it was designed with the purpose of reaching people who individually wanted to be leaving so that I'd work with individual clients. And that's what I did, you know, for about 10 years. It ended up turning into a whole different arena that I never anticipated, which was attracting a book deal and ending up working with a lot of companies that serve the small business market. And then the latest iteration here in September 2016 is opening up a small business learning laboratory in downtown Mesa.
That's so exciting. And say the name of it.
It's Ke.
Ke.
Yeah.
There's accents. I didn't know what they...
That's right. It's a Diné. It's a Navajo word. My husband is Navajo. So yeah. Ke. Think about it phonetically like K-E-H.
Yeah.
Ke. And it's a system of kinship within Navajo culture. And so when you learn how it is that you're specifically related to somebody by clan, there's always that feeling, which I love. I love to see it in the expression with my husband and with his relatives, where like they understand deeply how it is that they're related. And that feeling is Ke. So that my husband is the one that named the space, and that's part of what it is that we really want to be creating here, is something that's very welcoming for any person who walks through the door. We always say if somebody doesn't feel good when they walk in the door, there's no way we can do anything else. Like that has to be the foundation for everything, is belonging, feeling welcome from any walk of life, any background. And from there, that's really where we want to be doing the work.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And the pictures are amazing. It looks so fantastic. So if you're in the Mesa area, go to Ke.
Come see us.
Come see us at Ke. So you mentioned something that I think is really important, which is that by the time you were asking the question, should I quit this stupid job? The ship may already have sailed. Like, and that's certainly my experience personally, that by the time you're saying, should I divorce this person or should I leave it? Like, you've kind of already made the decision. You're just sort of looking for permission to actually go. What are some of the sort of the early warning signs how does a person know when it's time? I guess that's really my question.
So in Escape from Cubicle Nation, one thing I find myself saying all the time is that hating your job intensely is not a business plan. So there are many, many people. And again, when I started in 2005, there were not as many voices at all. Now it's been exciting to see that the whole space has just exploded, and they're probably millions of people who are writing on this topic about different ways to leave your job to start a business. But there is that feeling you have that what I am doing is not something that I really enjoy. And I would usually, for people, it's around a feeling of freedom. You know, I would love to be doing something that would give me freedom and flexibility and meaning and creativity. And sometimes the dream that is being sold is part of why I wrote my second book, Body of Work, because sometimes we get so excited as those of us that are talking about entrepreneurship that we sell it as if it's this simple, easy, dissolve in water, and in three easy steps, you're going to be magically making as much money as some of you have spent like 25 years slowly working yourself up in an organization. And when you think about that, like all the conversations, think about the work that you created, the relationships that you had, the process you went through in order to be compensated at a certain level. Sometimes, depending upon what you want to do on your own, you can make that amount of money immediately. When I quit my job, I immediately made more money as a consultant than I did as an employee. That was the nature of what I did and the time and all of it, right? So, but that's really an anomaly, you know, like people who are doing consulting, just leaving something they've already done, they have a good reputation, they charge more fees, they're good at sales and marketing, and they, you know, that for sure. Somebody who is going to be creating something unique, a product or a service, that doesn't have a huge amount of funding behind them or a big team in order to get it done, that can really take some time to do it. So that's the caveat that I always say is the So part of it is tuning into it and asking yourself, what is it about this experience right now? You know, why am I unhappy? Is it my environment? Is it the work that I'm doing? Is it who I'm doing it with? Is it the nature of who it is that I'm doing it for? You know, would like a different company in a different product be more exciting? And so those are the kinds of questions that you want to start to ask yourself. In body of work, I talked about a loathing scale, so from 1 to 10. So you can imagine number 1 is you spring out of bed and you can't wait to go to work in the morning. And 10 is that you're physically ill when you even think about getting up and going to work. And I have met people where literally they were sick from the stress of being so unhappy in their job. So what I often recommend is if you just check in with yourself a little bit to where you are in the scale, and usually you can feel it, you know, like in your gut. Usually on Sunday nights, the best time to check in, because that's when you're thinking about the week ahead, is, you know, when you start to kind of move past 5 and start to go into 6, that's a good time in which you can begin to explore other options. Mm-hmm. Let me give a little layer of dimension to this, because having worked with so many people over the years, I will tell you that your risk tolerance, your financial base, and the way that you work, in the Colby world, the Colby Index, your MO, your modus operandi, the way you take action can look very different for different people. So I have definitely met people who very easily did a side hustle on the side of their day job, where they slowly worked up, you know, their business to the point where they were able to quit and start a business. And that works for them. There are other people who quit their job without any savings, who were just like, I'm just going to take the leap because I can't handle it anymore and I'm going to do it. And they were successful. Like, that was me. I always tell my clients, like, do not do what I did. Like, I'm weird. Don't do that, you know. And so sometimes there are people who have a huge risk tolerance. There are other people who have a very different kind of experience financially, where based on their values and how they're wired, they really need and want, sometimes for very pragmatic cases, if they're the, you know, the sole breadwinner, if they are caring for an extended family, all these other reasons, they might really want to make sure that their finances are in order before they take a leap. But I've met some people who are super fine with doing a side hustle, and I've met other people who say, like, I literally cannot do 2 things at once. I have to get out of that old environment, get into the new one, in which case that's when I work with them really on a financial plan. And that's where I would say, do not quit your job until you have the financial foundation where you're really able to take the time that's needed. Because it's always a hypothesis, right? Sometimes 2 people with the exact same business idea and seemingly similar skills and experience can have radically different business outcomes.
Yeah. So this is so helpful. All right. So I want to underline 2 things I'm hearing you saying. One is that misery index, the loathing scale.
Yes.
And I remember growing up, I always heard, you know, you can love the people, love the money, or love the work itself. And if you ever get a job where you got 2 out of 3, you got a pretty good job. If you love 3 out of 3, ding, 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 you've hit the jackpot. So I can see that being helpful too. Like, okay, I love the people I work with. The money is meh, and the work itself is so boring and awful, I can't stand it. Like, okay, it's, you know, like being able to sort of take a measure that way. Which might also then, if you're at a place where it's like, okay, I'm not really ready to quit entirely, or I don't really have the risk tolerance to quit entirely, or my life circumstances don't really make that smart right now. So I can notice that there's a lack of meaning in my life. Like, I'm not getting the satisfaction of work from my work. So maybe I can start doing something else with some of the rest of my time that is going to fulfill me that way, whether it's a volunteer thing or a side hustle thing or getting more involved in my community or whatever. I will also say something you referenced earlier, which is it is entrepreneurship isn't easier than anything. Like, it's so hard on so many ways that you don't even know it's going to be hard. It's jaw dropping. However, the time freedom part of it, this idea that I can go nap in the middle of the day. I did today. You know, if my sister got ill in Connecticut and I was like, I'm on a plane. When do you need me? I'm there. you know. And that thin sliver of it, I have to say, is amazing. The not having to get to an office every day and be and like demonstrate your presence is
very true, depending on what kind of business that you have. Mm. Because if you have the cookie store next door, well, it's true. Sometimes which is Smithilator, the delicious cookie shop next door, run by my dear friend Heather Smith. But you know, when you have a store like that might have hours where you have to be there, right? Sometimes you can't. Or if you have the kind of business as a consultant where you're in the middle of a big project and you have deadlines and that are requirements for the client, you know, and it's
right.
I'm being a little bit Debbie Downer right here. That's part of my job, right? To inject a little bit of the reality, but it's like it you can choose to design a business that would give you more time freedom. And often it's after you have done the early stage design of really getting the business up and running and all the things that you need to have. But for people who value having that time flexibility, you're totally right. That would be, to me, part of the decision criteria if somebody does want to make sure that they're really flexible. It is one of those traps that I often see people get in to where they end up not having that flexibility because of the kind of business that they've created, you know. But I mean, do you have more? Yes. You don't have a boss that is, you know, getting mad at you, or you don't have to explain to anybody. It's more you have to figure out how to make it happen. Like if you don't work and you don't make any money, then how are you going to deal with that?
Right.
Depending upon your business.
Right. And I also have friends who've started businesses where they do more consulting and a lot more speaking, and they're traveling all the time, which that is really tiring and really hard on your family. So.
And some people love it. Like, I know friends who are like, 300 dates a year, rock on. This was a great year. And I'm sitting there like, whoa, man, I can't imagine. I can't imagine.
But, and just to reflect too on the being a little bit of a downer, I think that's important. I mean, as people used to say to me when I was coming up in as an actor, like, if you can be discouraged from doing this, then you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
If anything I say makes you go like, oh no, that's not for me, then good clue, take the message and go. But if you're still sitting there going, I know it's going to be really hard, but I think I can do it. Like, I know it's going to be really awful, but I think I really want to do it. And certainly the other thing that I think is really so exciting is a lot of what you're doing with Kev, that the ability to build something that is really a reflection of your values, so that your business itself becomes a force for good in the world. Like, we try and be a force for good in the world as individuals. You know, we try to smile at people in the grocery line and be like, no, I'm going to be one of the good guys. And, you know, we do that to make a better world. But to have a business that's doing it on a larger scale, where the core values of the business and the community rituals of the business and the way the whole business is set up is designed to support and nurture the values that we think are important, that is so good.
It is really, to me, that's the biggest area of joy and potential impact and creativity. It's everything, because in the choices that you make about what you do, you can absolutely infuse a perspective and a point of view that is uniquely yours. And we always have to meet the market for where the market is. We always have to be able to tell the story in a way and to sell our services in a way or products that the market understands, right? We can have a very strong point of view and not have anybody buy anything, right? So that's part of the journey of how it is that we figure it out. But that is a perspective. That is the side to me that has a huge upside for solving problems that haven't been solved in, you know, in an interesting way before. Mm-hmm. I know as we're looking at what we're doing here at the Learning Lab, I've been having amazing, interesting conversations. Everything from a high school student, a sophomore, who's like, oh my gosh, he's like clearly the next Bill Gates already. He's amazing. His name is Carlos. He goes to Red Mountain High School here, which is the high school that my kids will go to. It's like in my neighborhood. And he's amazing, like creating this peer-to-peer incubator model. He's like, I'm going to be helping them with the design of the curriculum. And they're already like working all these different angles with all these different people. It's so interesting. And then there's somebody I was meeting with from the the Mesa Rail, which is a nonprofit that looks at retail, the arts, innovation, and livability, you know, within our city. And it's so fun because as we're, you know, I'm having this conversation with people looking at what it is that we're designing, we can be putting in these very specific design principles, right? With Carlos, he's like, he gets so tired sometimes as a high school student of always having to go and ask permission from adults for everything. He totally understands that he doesn't have all the information. Although from talking to him for like 40 minutes, I think he knows more than I do after 23 years in business. But, you know, that point of view is one that like, he totally can be building into his business. You know, here locally, as we're looking at how it is that we are designing a strategy for small business capacity building, we can do it. A design principle to me that's important is for the person in our community that has the least amount of power, right? Who might be the most marginalized. Imagine if we were to always start our design from that perspective. It's going to give us huge creativity in different ways in which we're thinking about what it is that we're building. And so by design and default, we're going to be creating strategies that are going to be inclusive for the folks we know that are really on the margins. You know, so it's like those things, like there's no price to me about how fun and interesting and creative, you know, and it's like, because I can.
Because like, I can, because I want to, this is what I want to build.
Because that's the way that I'm going to do it. So, you know, I mean, that's the part of it that totally has that creative freedom and joy. And whatever it is that you're doing, that's where you can put your own unique spin on it.
Like, I'm thinking about our friend Tyler Garnes, who has a business, Small Box Out Marketing, which is it was a small business, now getting to be kind of a big business, but he does, you know, marketing for other small businesses. And in their contract, it says, we do not work weekends. We are not available after 6 o'clock. We take the week off between Christmas and New Year's. We take off these holidays. We are here to build a sustainable business for ourselves and our community and our family. And we want that for you too. We do not respond to emergency calls, like too bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's in his contract. Like, I love that. Like,
that's awesome. What a beautiful kind of a radical statement that some people would say, like, why would you ever do that? You're going to lose all kinds of business. And I bet people are running to him and his business because it's taking a stand for something that's really important, right? And people can say, wow, you know, if they're so willing to stand on that, like they must really deeply value it. And like, that's what I want in my life too. And what's so funny that anybody who's been working in the arena for a long time knows is that you actually within corporate too, within corporate or within small business is when you do have really clear boundaries and you do show up, you're like, this is just the way that we do it. People kind of fall into line. They're like, oh, that's your deadline. Okay, well then I'll get myself organized to do it. Versus if you're like 24/7, call us anytime. You know, I don't really believe in vacation. We're here to be responsive. Good luck with that.
I had a client who was like, oh my God, my people are calling me at, you know, 11 o'clock on a Sunday night. But I'm like, why would you answer the phone? I'm like, you're the one telling them it's okay when you answer the phone. Don't answer the phone. Like, oh, but they might quit. Well, they probably should quit. Like, bad clients are expensive.
Yes.
Nothing
yes.
worse than a bad client. You also mentioned something that I think is a super valuable resource, which is the Kolbe, K-O-L-B-E test, which I only learned about a couple of years ago, but it's so helpful. And it assesses not your, it's like Myers-Briggs or IQ. It's a test like that, but it assesses, like Pam says, your MO, like how do you go about doing things?
It's your conative style, I think, is the technical term.
Conative style, exactly, yes. Which is a word I didn't know until I learned Kolbe. So it's not cognitive, it's conative. And it has to do with, what are your go-to strategies, particularly under stress and particularly in a work environment? And so like, if you're really high on the research thing, you may find yourself sort of getting ready to get ready to get ready to get ready and understand that like, oh, if I'm going to get engaged in entrepreneurship, I'm going to want somebody who's more what Kolbe calls a quick start, which is that's the jump off the building and build the parachute on the way down.
Right.
Which How hard can it be? What's the worst that can happen? How hard can it be?
Well, and it's a great example because I'm a raging quick start, right? We each have like four different dimensions, and that's where you see we need it. It's one of the useful lenses. In fact, with a lot of clients, I'll use that tool in thinking about doing the planning and the implementation, because if somebody does have more a quick start nature, it's much easier to work with that kind of person to do prototypes and tests and, you know, talk about an idea a little bit and then get it out in the world and get feedback. For somebody who might be from a different profile, like a fact finder, they can start to move into a zone of really high stress. If you're like, yeah, let's talk about it today and tomorrow, just send a message out. I know we haven't really defined what things are, just send out a message. And I've seen like their faces turn totally, you know, red or ashen, and because it is so far goes against the way that they're wired. The same is true, like many different dimensions we can see of, you know, strengths that people have, is when you are forming your team, there will be certain areas where if you are somebody who really is a quick start and you can get things rolling really quickly, sooner or later, if you don't have that follow through and implementation, it's going to start to hurt your business. You know, I've been working kind of flying solo, you know, for a little while, just as I'm getting all my new business model going. And I feel it. Yeah, I feel, and I know my clients probably feel it too. I'm fully present. I show up when I'm there, but I'm like, oh, that email that I promised to send, you know, is follow up. And it just ends up being this thing where over time I realize I must have somebody on my team who really is great at the follow through and implementation.
Yeah, I actually realized just recently that I needed to hire a CGO, which is a chief grown-up officer. And I wrote the imaginary help wanted ad, and this might be a useful practice for you guys. I wrote the imaginary help wanted ad that said, wanted, eagle-eyed naysayer with a dim view of humanity who loves reviewing contracts and telling Sam, no.
What a great description.
Right, because I'm a quickster. I'm like, it'll be fine. Sure, of course I can be there. Yeah, we can do that. And then I'm juggling 400 things and not keeping my eye on the prize and doing things because other people want me to and not because it's part of my strategic plan for the year and, you know, all this other stuff. And the minute I wrote it out, I realized, oh, wait, I know this person. And she was looking for work and not full-time work, which was perfect. Like, and it has been so beautiful. Mm. So beautiful to have somebody else in the meeting, somebody else's brain, among other things, just somebody else thinking strategically. But even that, just somebody to say, can I take a look at that contract before you sign it? You know, I'm sorry, Sam, why are we doing this? Why do you want to do this? I'm like, cause it seems like fun. I don't know. I'll tell them no. She's like, right. Tell them no. I'm like, okay. I need to be protected from myself.
That's awesome. I love that.
It's pretty good. So what else about this, you know, let's say you've taken this little self-assessment about, okay, I'm not loving the time. I'm not loving the money. I'm not loving the work. I'm not loving the people. I'm concerned that I'm going to start getting sick if I'm not already, just from pure unhappiness, just being poisoned by unhappiness. What are some first steps? What can people do to start? If they're not the quit, you know, I'm like you, I would just quit. And I did. When I started my business full time, I was like, I had nothing in the bank. There was no budget. There was no plan. There was nothing. But I do really well under that kind of pressure. So it was fine for
me. That's right.
But yeah. For normal people.
Yes. So I think there are different stages of what it is that you can work on. In the early stages, sometimes people do have a well-developed specific idea of something that they want to do. And so there are more and more people we see with the trends of what's happening within the workforce that either by choice or by force, people are going to be moving out sometimes from doing full-time work and doing a freelance or contractor that could just be really just a different work mode in which they're doing similar work to what they have done. And so that path and that process, if you still enjoy that, that could be an example where you say, I really love the work. And, you know, maybe I don't love the money or, you know, I want to work with different people. That could be a reason to shift. And so in that type of business situation, then that process can happen a little bit quicker. There's always going to be the business infrastructure kinds of pieces of making sure that you're protected and you have your business license and, you know, set up an LLC and a bank account and all those really important things to do. But if you don't have any idea what it is that you want to do, then that's, I think, where you need to go through this whole process of iteration. And it's funny, I go philosophically to a couple of different places around this. And so on one hand, where the only driver that you have for wanting to work for yourself is just to like be out of your old job, sometimes I kind of nudge people creatively to maybe take a little bit more time exploring if there are some other ways either to shift to a different position within the company or go to a different company that could be a better fit. Mm-hmm. Because when I'm listening for it, it's where somebody is like, the only thing that's driving them is I just really want to get out of here. Because philosophically, when you really do want to bring a business idea into the market, there has to be this strong point of view that there is a problem that you're really interested in solving, right? And you have, there is a market who's really willing to pay for that product and service. That said, there definitely are a lot of different ways that you can choose to work for yourself. And that's where you can see people making choices like purchasing in a franchise or, you know, as we said before, working freelance or independently, probably the part that involves the most risk and is the area where I'd say it doesn't necessarily, historically, I haven't seen it really jump out where somebody's like, I really hate my job. I don't really know what I want to do. And then they just end up like creating the next Apple or something, right? Yeah. Like usually it's been that person like Carlos, the high school student I was talking to today, who was like, yeah, I've been such a weird kid. He grew up in Mexico. And he was like, you know, I would be the kid like sitting on the swings and everybody's just playing and having a good time. And he's like, and I would be analyzing like, how is this thing put together and how does it work? And I was teasing him like, you know, how do I monetize like having people, you know, do the swings? And we were just laughing in that. That's the whole way that he's always had that orientation to things of designing, you know, coming up with product design. That's the way that he sees the world is designing unique products. You know, his sister had a health condition where she had to be like having some type of a monitor. And so he found out a way to create this product that works with a regular Apple Watch where he created this little strip that could like go underneath it. Yeah. And I'm like, this was probably like when he was 12 or something. And I'm like, somebody like that is often wired where they really are used to seeing innovative solutions and really seeing what the problem is. So, you know, and just 1,000 different examples in between, right? Mm-hmm. So just to anchor that in terms of people who are listening, who are thinking about it from different ways as you try to identify, you know, who you are. Some of it is like going through the door in Narnia, if you've ever read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where I know for me, like I didn't even realize all the options that were there until I began to engage in the world of entrepreneurship. Like I literally had no idea that there were so many millions of people that were doing business in these new ways. And this was back in, 1996. But then when I went in 2005 and started this whole, you know, entrepreneurship way, part of it is just learning all the different ways that you can work, right? But it's also recognizing that in order for you to have a viable business, and especially if you have the expectation that you want to be earning the equivalent, if you've been for a while in a corporate job, of a pretty solid salary with all the extended comp structure, right, of benefits and retirement and all these other great things, then it really needs to have a lot of market viability. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we get lucky and we just like happen upon some idea that makes us $1 million and more, but other times there's a whole variety of steps that you can take in order to get there. But to kind of summarize this early stage of ideation, before jumping directly into something that just sounds good, I really recommend that people spend some time like really exploring what are your skills and your strengths and what do you really care about and what are problems you see in the world and what are ideas you have and test and try a number of different options in order for you to come up with a good solution. It's kind of the process that I outlined in Escape from Cubicle Nation.
Yeah, that's so good. And I think it can be hard sometimes for us to know our own skills and talents. I mean, we can know like what we get good reviews for, you know, what other people value, but that doesn't always match what we value about ourselves or what we love doing the most. And And because it's the water you swim in, it may not always be immediately evident to you what those, your sort of special sauce, your special skills might be. And I love in body of work how you help people walk through their own life history to sort of see what are some of the common threads of things that have motivated me or moved me or inspired me, or, you know, what have I really been building to all these years?
Yeah.
So there's resources there. I'm also, my nephew is 8 and he called me the other day to pitch me a television show. And like, no, and he had like the pitch. He's like, here's the talk, here's the log line, here's who it's for, here's what it looks like, here's who we need to produce it. Here's what he goes, there's gotta be a hook. I'm like, who are you? But that's who he is. He's a, you know, he's 8 and he's a showman. He's P.T. Barnum and Katie bar the door, because yeah, he and Carlos are gonna be running the world together.
That is so awesome.
It's so awesome. So, you know, but some of your skills may be subtler than that. You know, it may not be the kind of thing where you're monetizing the swing set or producing shows at the age of 8. And so be patient with yourself around that. I just want to say to people, like, it's okay to take a minute to really, we're not often asked, what do you want? You know, we're not, that's not a question I think most of us are really used to looking at in any kind of real way. Mm-hmm. What do you want your work life to bring you? What are you here on this planet to do? What would really be meaningful for you? Like, that's...
Well, and there's something that I wrote about in Escape, because it was a real thing that I saw every single day when I was consulting inside companies, when I would be asking people that question of what is something that you really love or what do you really enjoy? It was the most common response was, I have no idea. And I call the process like thawing out your soul, because sometimes, and again, I am not one to say all corporate environments are terrible. I don't believe that. I really don't. But sometimes when you're in like a very large company where there are politics and dynamics, in order to survive, you need to, you might have an instinct if you're walking through your day and you're attending a meeting and inside your head, you're thinking, this makes no sense. Why in the world are we doing this? And yet you know that it's not maybe politically safe to be sharing that opinion. Basically what you're doing all day long is you're just pushing down the true voice that you have inside that's telling you how you feel in order to survive. Mm. Or you may be doing things that you don't really enjoy because you have a real value at providing a great foundation for your family, which can be a really strong motivator. And that can cause a lot of joy for people to be able to do that. But again, if every day you're doing something that's really uninteresting, or at an extreme can be something you feel is actually causing harm, you know, like doing stuff you don't really believe in, it ends up, you do start paying a price where you are not aware, you're disconnected from what your true emotions are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think that's where we see, you know, in some extreme cases, somebody might have an outburst, or, you know, they end up really having like a big meltdown. I think about the Tom Cruise movie, Jerry Maguire, where mm-hmm. he, you know, says a big speech and he grabs the goldfish. If anybody's ever seen that movie, where he just all of a sudden like gets inspired and, you know, goes and tells everybody exactly what he thinks. And everybody's looking at him as if he's totally lost his mind. And those are the kinds of things sometimes that happen if you let your emotions go unchecked. You know, a lot of what the research says health-wise, what happens too is when you're just tapping that down and increasing the stress, that's part of what ends up creating a whole series of, you know, of health issues for people. So it often is, I remember I had a client once where I was asking her these questions and she was still in her full-time job and was just, she was like, I have no idea. I don't even know what I feel. And so I was like, okay, what's something that you know you used to love? Something that you've done that you know brings you a lot of joy. And she was like, I love Broadway shows, which by the way, so do I. So I was like, awesome. She was somewhere in the East Coast. I'm like, go to New York, go see a Broadway show and like let's talk in a, you know, a couple of weeks. And she came back to that call and it was like this whole wave of things happened because she had just not even thought about the fact that that's something that she loves so much. And being in that environment of a Broadway show was so invigorating for her. And that just helped to like, you know, unlock some things. So yeah. as you're breaking the iceberg around your heart, when you're trying to figure out what it is that you want to do, I mean, sometimes it can be painful, especially if you're still in that job. It's kind of like the relationship metaphors, unfortunately, really work a lot with work life, because it's like when you might begin to realize that you're in a relationship that's really unhealthy, and yet for whatever reason, you still kind of choose to be there. It can be very painful when you have that awareness. It's like, you know, being in the matrix and all of a sudden, you know, seeing what's going on. But that process is necessary for you to begin to understand what are some of these deeper things that you want to do. And one of the things that I discovered when I was writing Body of Work, when we started to look at things like passion or purpose, like I don't believe as a coach for many decades now, I really don't believe that everybody can always identify or even has a singular passion. That for some people are like, yes, this is my mission always. I've always had this passion. My dad's a photographer and he's been one for, you know, 50 years, and he still has as much passion today for that as he did when he first started. But for many other people, those, I call them your roots, plural, right? You can have deep emotional connection to different things at different stages of your life, things that really excite you. So this can be something that can send a lot of people to a corner where they're banging their head against the wall because they go in pursuit of their main purpose, right? Or their big passion. And that can be something that can be very kind of confusing, and it's not always helpful.
And particularly for the, you know, my people are mostly creatives. They would mostly self-define as creatives. They're not all artistic, but they're all creatives. And by definition, people who are highly creative have a lot of different skills and interests, have a lot of different passions, are good at a lot, you know, that sort of Renaissance soul thing is very real. And so sometimes the feeling is like, I have no idea what I want. Sometimes the idea is I can think of 50 things I could want or would want to do.
Yeah.
So this process, and I think this is, I often think about entrepreneurship as spiritual growth, because it is far and away the yes. best personal development tool you will ever find.
Yes, it is.
You'll cut right to the, if you ever wondered like what your stuff is, start a business. You'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah, all of it will immediately come up. That
all
is the
of
truth.
It will immediately come up. So one example of that is exactly what Pam's talking about right now. This process of learning to really give a little megaphone to that tiny voice inside of you that says, I kind of want something. I might like to see a show. I might like something where people hug. You know, I might like something with color. I might like, you know, and we tend to, or I might like to write a book, or I might like to, you know, that I want voice is very little. And all the voices outside of us and all the voices in our head are very loud and saying, well, you can't do that. And you can't make money from that. And that's not sensible. And that's not practical. And your parents paid all that money for your education. Who do you think you are? And it's very challenging to empower that little inner voice against all those big outside voices, but that's the process of maturation. Whether you quit your job or not, you still need to become the person that you are. And that voice, that little voice of desire, that little thawing out process, that's a big part of it. That's a big part of it. Being authentically who you are in the world.
It's really true, you know, and it's... It's really a daily choice, I think, for us. It's a much bigger question and an approach to life, I think, rather than just how it is that we are in work, where you do choose to show up every day and to pay attention to whatever your truth is and to be engaged in relationships in a way that you feel is really straightforward and direct, and to be a conscious parent if you happen to have children, right? Thinking about how that is, how you're connected with a community. It really does kind of all come from this source, which is, it's the neat thing that often we give ourselves the opportunity to do that growth and to experience that through exploring different work modes, like working for ourselves. As you said, it's such a great form of personal development. And it's also something that you can notice, and I find it all the time in working with clients. It's amazing where once they go through the magic door, before, especially in my days of doing the early stage coaching for Escape from Cubicle Nation, where people are leaving a corporate job. They could go through the magic door, like they leave the door of the corporation, they start their business, and then they go into this other Narnia world. Before they go through the magic door, it is so hard to explain in all the many ways in which life can be different. And, you know, we don't always know for any person exactly what that's going to be. But I have seen people go through just complete and total life transformation in many ways besides the way that they work when they choose to do that. And just to always keep anchored within, you know, a complex reality of like different things that can happen whenever you make a change in your life. You know, it's not like we can guarantee that if you're miserable and you leave and you do something else, that immediately that's going to be fixing all the problems. The cool thing though, if you look at it from a developmental lens, is that by virtue of the fact that you tried it, and by doing that and seeing what is it that you like and you don't like, part of the reason I wrote Body of Work is I would see people go through that early stage of transition, explore it, and in some cases find, you know what, I thought that this is what I wanted to do, but I really had no idea what it was really like. And I don't actually want to do this. Like, I would rather go back and work in an organization. But the person they are that might go back, in some cases, going back to work where they used to work, is a very different person. They're going to have a very different perspective. Or very often they might choose to do something to move in a new direction, right? To work as an employee, but, you know, for a different type of company or whatever that is. So it is more of all the things I think that are really critical from like a mindset perspective. And just if you think about, you know, what could we tell you before you've taken this journey, like before you're embarking on this journey, you know, having a mindset that is always open to learning, that like looks at every opportunity as a position for growth, looking at everything like a scientist, where you have a hypothesis that I think this is going to solve the problem that I have of intense work dissatisfaction. Once I begin to do it, let me see what the truth tells me. Right. And, or, you know, once you have a business, I'm going to try this big new marketing campaign because I really think this is the way I'm going to get a bunch of customers. And then it doesn't work. And if you can look at it with curiosity and openness, as opposed to, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? I never should have done that. You know, I'm a failure. That attitude is one that is the deal maker, that over time, like you have to have that grit and you have to be willing to fail. It's why probably actors are like very well equipped.
Totally.
for entrepreneurs. I can think of fewer rejection. Like professions that, yeah, like you're professionally rejected at every turn. But you know, that mindset is one that actually will often lead to more creative options, can lead to success. It's funny, I was just telling my husband and I were talking with our son about this and this morning on the way to school, just what that mindset is like. Instead of you might see an opportunity and you might think, oh, there's no way that I could ever do that. What if you instead have that mindset of this feels a little bit scary and it's going to stretch me, but I really am willing to try. And I may fail and I may not, but it's like to choose that mindset rather than I may fail and it may be hard, therefore I'm just not going to do it. You know, both my husband and I were like, having that mindset is not going to be helpful to you in whatever area that you choose to work
whatever
in sports, in school, in work, whatever.
Right. Letting your fear and anxiety make your decisions for you is not going to lead to a happy life. And what Pam's saying is exactly right. I often think of it as skydiving. Like, we can talk to you about skydiving and you can watch videos of skydiving and we can prep you as much as we can, but you become a skydiver by jumping out of an airplane. And you find out in the process of jumping out of an airplane how that is for you, you know? And the great news is you become the person who jumps out of an airplane and then you've done it and now you've jumped out of an airplane. Like, and now you've had that experience and now you can get, you know, curious about, oh, do I want to do that again? How was that for me? How would I do that differently next time? But there's no way before you go through the magic door to explain what it's going to be like for anybody, really, because
it's honestly the paradox in the work. It's why it does take it. I think it takes a combination of really careful planning and assessment and just having your eyes wide open and, you know, doing the best planning that you can. But then, yeah, always recognizing that it's not always possible for you to understand if it's going to work or not. Right. And that's hard. That's hard.
It is. And we think we should be able to control these things, but we can't. The other thing I wanted to say about what you were saying about unthawing your soul and kind of focusing on just what you want, your little wants and desires, and just exploring those so you have some answers about what do you want, is if you do decide to go into entrepreneurship full time, that inner voice, that being able to hear your intuition, to hear your desire, to hear those little, I call them little postcards from God, you know, those little like, I don't know why this seems like a good idea. I don't know why I'm wanting to say yes to this. But because that's, I mean, other than your skill set and your knowledge capital and your relationships, all of which are super important, that intuition, that inner compass is really what's going to steer you in the right direction.
It's very powerful. And countless times, you know, I have kind of a weird approach. It's one of the reasons I love so much working with a whole variety of different people, because I have, my brother is a scientist, my brother and my sister-in-law are scientists. And so they have this, you know, very science focused approach to things. And I never have the patience. And like, I'm always like running around with all kinds of creative ideas, usually, you know, too much to be able to go like super deep just into one track of research. But I appreciate the point of view of really like taking a rigorous approach to like multiple ways that you can look at a challenge. And for my craft, for the profession, which I could handle the risk for myself. As I said, I have a very high tolerance for risk. The people who I'm working with are making very big decisions about giving up stability in terms of what their, you know, their monthly salary and their income and all that reputation they have. We can all make the argument, which I believe to be true, is that nothing is stable. So I've seen far too much in my work as a corporate consultant to know that just because you have a job at a corporation doesn't mean it will stay that way. Like, there is risk in that as well. But the reality is that when you do have a direct deposit paycheck in your account every 2 weeks, it's very different when you choose to leave. And so managing that part of the process and taking seriously what that is, it's very important to me that people are able to look at it with eyes wide open, with rigor. And then with that, it is where you really can tap into your intuition. There have been so many times, it's so funny, like as much as I can be super pragmatic and analytical on that side, I remember when I had my consulting business, I was living in Oakland at Lake Merritt, which is a really beautiful neighborhood in Oakland. And it was great. Like, I had great clients and I would go walk around the lake and go get coffee at Pete's Coffee. It was just a great time. I was single, you know, just super fun. And I had had a couple client projects that were winding down. And so I was walking back from the gym one day, or like kickboxing class or something. And I was walking up to my apartment and I was like, I don't really have any work. And I just like stopped on the stairs and I looked up at the universe and I'm like, you know what? I just need like a really big honking project. Like, that would be awesome. And then I continued walking up the stairs. And I kid you not, the next day I got a call from somebody who I had worked with a couple of years before. And she was like, you know what? I just took a job at a company. And would you be interested? There's this consulting project, which turned out to be 2 years worth of massive amounts of work, you know, and big piles of money. And so, you know, I can be like, well, that's just kind of weird. And like, I would never say to somebody, just, you know, look to the sky and say to the universe. I had another thing where I was talking with one of my colleagues and I said, you know, I really kind of want to use my Spanish because I lived in Latin America. It would be really fun to do a project. None of that work had ever happened for years. The next day the phone rings and it was a company saying, we have this group of managers from Latin America. Like, could you, you know, do something in Spanish? And so that's like sometimes the mysterious part of it, right? Is there, I have no idea what it is. I really don't. Certain people have different points of view about what that can be, if it's, you know, whatever, law of attraction. I don't know. But to me, there is something about a clarity of focus and intention, an openness that you have. And there's times where you might be a weirdo like me and look at the sky and say what you want. It doesn't always work, by the way. But sometimes it does. Mm-hmm. And then there's other times where you use that clarity and that point of view where you actually say it to a room filled with people who could be potential clients. Like, I really would love to do this kind of work to real people who are connected to other people who have that work. So it's just funny in that I find that it's useful sometimes to be open to, in the spirit of curiosity and experimentation, many different ways that you can be opening yourself up to possibilities, you know? And it's like, it's happened so many times that I can't dismiss it, but I don't have any idea really what it is or how it works.
No.
Nor do I think I need to.
No, I think everything is true. I'm like, sure, crystals, past lives, Reiki, God, spirit, I don't know. Sure, call it whatever you want. Because we all, whatever it is, we've all had that experience, right? We've all had that like, okay, that seems like kind of like magic. Like, that's kind of beyond what I could have made happen by myself.
Yes.
Something else is at work here. And it seems benevolent, like that's a nice feeling. So in whatever way feels comfortable for you to align with the benevolent hum of the universe, like get in that groove because, and this is the last thing I want to say before I let you go have dinner with your beautiful family. You do have the most beautiful children. You won like the kid sweepstakes for sure.
I lucked out.
Yeah, they're great. So I bring you a hello from our friend, Seth Godin.
Hi, Seth.
When I wrote him and I asked him to be on this, knowing that there was no way he was going to do it, but I kind of wanted to let him know that I was doing it. And I thought, you never know. I mean, he might be in a mood and say yes. So I told, and you had already said yes. So I told him that you were going to be on it. And he said, oh, give my love to Pam. And, you know, send a really nice note. Like, you know, some rejections are even better than yeses.
He's such an awesome person. I love him so much.
He is. And that's another one where, you know, when Get It Done was getting published and I, the publisher was asking me for endorsements and I had some of my Hollywood actor friends who were willing to do it, which was nice. And they were like, yeah, but we need real people. who would you like? And it was the same thing. I looked up at this guy and I said, I don't know who's available. Jesus, Seth Godin, the Heath brothers. Like that was my list. Daniel Pink. That was my list. Yeah. Like in my fantasy dream world, sure, those are my people. And Seth came back right away with this incredible endorsement. And people ask me even now, like, how did that happen? How did you get him to do that? I'm like, no, I didn't get him to do anything. Seth does what Seth wants to do when Seth wants to do it.
Yeah.
Because he's Seth Godin. But the fact that he did it, I mean, I couldn't have predicted that. It was such an incredible gift to me that Guy Kawasaki kind of did it for you, for you know, like sometimes you open yourself up and like heaven kisses you a little, you know?
Yeah, I really think so. You know, and part of it too is where when you focus on the craft of what you're doing and when you really have that love of the craft. I had an experience with Guy Kawasaki early on in my blogging career where he posted something that I wrote that I shared with him, which was so wonderful and ended up really giving me great exposure. And then throughout the years, we became friends and we did a panel at South by Southwest on blog to book. So it's people who had kind of started from a blog that ended up being in a book. And somebody asked him a question in the audience of, how do you get the attention of people who are the influencers, right? We all have that dream list. For me, it's John Legend. So for anybody who's listening.
Oh, that's right.
I love John Legend as a humanitarian, as a thought leader, as an artist. You know, I always put the plug in because you never know who's like John Legend's cousin. So if you are, please introduce me. But, you know, you always kind of have that dream list. But when somebody asked the question of Guy, like basically how do I do it? Like, what's the secret? You know, what's the secret email that will get somebody to open it and say yes? And he said, you know, people say that I have the Midas touch, thinking that what I touch turns to gold. He said, I only touch gold. So that.
Nobody chills on that. Like.
As did I, right, on that panel. Because, and what that means is if you focus always, always, always on the craft of your work, if you always focus on what is that problem that you want to solve, how can you be rigorously in support of the customers that you serve and have that be the focus of what you're doing, you will do better work. That's really in the spirit of reciprocity, you know, of networks, like where we truly are contributing something that is making a difference, where the business or the point of view or the idea that we're sharing is one that's really highly complementary. And for people who, I call them just more experienced equals, people who we admire, we really are all, we're all equal. We're really made that way. There's not, sometimes we create these artificial ladders. We can respect that people who have gained a huge amount of experience and credibility within an area, they do have a lot of people that are coming at them. And to be respectful of that, knowing they're getting so many asks, you know, a day. But for that person, in whatever their point of view is about what they believe in and what the work is, where you're creating something that's really highly complementary that will be helping the person who they also care to help, that's when you get those yeses. Yeah. Right? That's when you know that you can feel confident in what you do. And, you know, along the way, you and I have all gotten a million no's as well. But yeah. It's a matter of believing in yourself, believing in your point of view, and knowing, and Seth is kind of famous for saying, like, don't wait to get picked. Like, pick yourself. Focus on the craft of what you do. Believe in it. Have a point of view on it. And in my own experience, I think that is something that was really helpful. Like, as soon as I shifted into that mode of really talking about something where I knew it so well, I had lived for so many years in the halls of corporations, I think that's why way back in the day, in 2005, that's why I think the words really were resonating with people, because that really was my truth. I understood that reality. And I always thought about, like, what actually is the thought bubble that's going on, you know, in people's heads. And I knew it because I had been the one who had had all those side conversations where people felt confident saying, you know I'm appearing to be this senior leader and then have everything together. Like, actually, my whole life is falling apart. You know, and my wife is leaving me and I'm like on the edge. And that's a privilege to be able to have those kinds of conversations and to be creating something that is really, you know, supportive. So I think it's a great place to be. Closing the conversation that we have today and really always coming back to, you know, we're all making it up sometimes. It doesn't have to be perfect. But when you really do land on something where you feel like it's what it is that you want to do, if you're going to be a freelancer, really zero in on being like the very best freelancer that you can be. Believe in your craft. Be rigorous about the clients that you're working with. Like, streamline your operations so that you have a killer, like, effective kind of business that you run. And that's going to be something I think that gives you great satisfaction, no matter the scale of what it is that you're doing.
100%. Step one, be amazing.
Yes.
Whatever it is you're doing, just blow the socks off of everybody with it. And everything else from there, you can be tweaking, marketing, pricing, you know, positioning, all that stuff can be rearranged. But the heart of what you do, and if you're amazing at it, like you say, it'll fulfill you. Even if it ends up not working out overall, it will still be a worthwhile journey.
It's true. And first, you may not be totally amazing if it's a new thing you're doing, you care deeply, exactly. Right? Care deeply about the process, and then you will develop that mastery.
Exactly. Pam, thank you so much for being here and sharing your insights and your wisdom and your beautiful heart with everybody. I'm so grateful to you.
My great pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Thanks, everybody. If you've enjoyed this, but your time is limited and you'd like access to the rest of them, please hop over to therealsambennett.com/freedom. That's therealsambennett.com/freedom. And there you can opt in, get access to all these recordings and a bunch of fun freebies. We'd love to see you there. In the meantime, remember, the world needs your good work. Thanks, everybody.